what happens when writer entertainer Nina Collins starts complaining about the fears, the woes, the anxiety of aging, even though she's only in her 40s. She complains on Facebook. Thousands of familiar people who feel the way she does later. Nina Collins is changing her world and everyone else's little by little. Join me on Let Me Tell You. Welcome to Joan Hamburg's Let Me Tell You podcast. Well, you know, the truth is we have two podcasts and we talk about everything. We whine, we complain, we celebrate, and you can get both our podcasts by going on to the OGPodcastNetwork.com. Very easy. And boy, we're growing by leaps and bounds. Love having you. And before we get officially started, I want to remind you, because we're excited, we're having our live celebration of Broadway, celebration of all great things on Tuesday, June 5th, and a new location for us, Yummy, a top-rated New York restaurant right in the Theater District called the Empire Steakhouse, and they've planned a fabulous menu for you, and you're going to meet the stars of almost every Broadway show. Plus, a couple of my pals are stopping by, like Alan Alda. The only thing is, dear hearts, you need a reservation. It's a Yummy lunch. It's great people. And we always have a ball. 212-613-3848. So it's 212-613-3848. So I know you're going to enjoy that. And I wanted to mention this, actually, what a week, really. Philip Roth, who was one of the great American writers of all time, huge. In fact, when I was reading a story in the New York Times about Philip, they said the death of Philip Roth signifies the end of a cultural era as definitively as the death of Pablo Picasso, which is extraordinary. And you know, it was not only poignant because the loss of one of the great American voices, but when we were in Barnard, he was one of my good college friends, boyfriends. And we all knew Philip. He was working at the library in Newark, where he grew up, and he wanted to be a writer. He was a really incredibly talented guy, as was my friend, who grew up to be one of the famous literary agents and Paris Review and everything else. But we spent plenty of time. And when you think about everyone's dreams when they're 20, 19, 20, 21, his really came true. From Newark, New Jersey, he did it. And he left permanent footprints, whether you're a reader or not. He changed literature forever. So he had a great life. And, you know, when someone is 85, you hate to say too soon, but too soon, because such talent and such gifts. But, you know, really the end of an era. Anyway, Joan's week was full of stuff. Of course, I follow my stomach and went downtown to Tribeca. And my first stop was really at a very interesting bakery called SB, Sherry B. Dessert Studio. And Sherry B.'s Dessert Studio was at 643 Hudson Street. You know, it's one thing to take the subway, which I do not do enough because I'm always dragging books, a case full of heavy stuff, and I have yet to find an escalator in any of the places where I would get subway access. So it's hard. So I got a ride. What a mistake. Construction on every street all over New York. I've never seen the city like that. It's like no one is watching. It took us forever. But we went downtown and we went to SB, this cookie bar, where they have these wonderful homemade cookies from chocolate chunk, peanut butter, butterscotch oatmeal, toffee crunch, delicious homemade chocolate dip grams, everything. And they have homemade ice cream, and you mix it all up. It is delicious. You create your own, too. So, of course, we had a lot of fun there, and they had delicious coffee as well. And then, so you want to stop there. It's great. And by the way, they'll mail order, too. So if you're having a party or a kid's party, just try it out. Sherry B. Dessert Studio, 643 Hudson Street in New York City. Then my daughter, Lizzie, told me that she knew a woman who started a bakery on Greenwich, right in the village, 28 Greenwich Avenue, between 10th and Charles, called Mah, M-A-H-Z-Z-E-D-A-H-R. And she said, Mom, you know it, because she used to cook out of a rented kitchen in her apartment, and she made chocolate ganache cake. That was the best thing we ever had. And brioche donuts and lemon meringue. Really fabulous. And this woman went to Wharton, had an MBA. She was brilliant. And then her passion was baking. She just loved it. And Tom Colicchio, the famous food person, had access to tasting some of her stuff, and he said, this is what you got to do. And she did it, and she's doing it. She's not cheap, but trust me, as someone who knows her sugar, butter, and flour all mixed up, absolutely fabulous. 212-498-9810. Really yummy. So that's just a couple of things. Oh, and by the way, this weekend, Memorial Day, is the first of the holiday season. It's supposed to be really fantastic, even though we may have a little weather as we get closer to the holiday. But if you've never done a tour of any of these ships that are in for Fleet Week, I promise you, it's spectacular. And you go to Pier 90 in Manhattan, the Brooklyn Cruise Terminal in Red Hook, Brooklyn, and Homeport Pier in Staten Island. And find out. Go online, Google it. But there's a lot of stuff today, too. The general tours, they're on Saturday. There's events all the time. Sunday, bring the kids. It's festive, it's great, and it's memorable. And the ships are leaving on Tuesday, so try to take advantage of it. And there's all kinds of activities. The Intrepid is having Battle of the Big Bands, all stuff that we love. So there's a lot of things I want to tell you about, but we have to get ready for our exclusive podcast. And you know, a woman in her 40s, a writer, a fabulously interesting woman, grew up in a biracial household with a mother who died in her 40s. And this woman, mother of four, started feeling anxiety about aging. And wait until you hear what she did and the impact that she has made on women's lives. So straight ahead, my very own Joan Hamburg's Let Me Tell You, coming up now. Welcome to Joan Hamburg's Let Me Tell You podcast. And women are really amazing. I want you to meet Nina Lawrence Collins, who's got a new book out, What Would Virginia Woolf Do? And Nina of course, went to my alma mater, Barnard College.
Barnard?
Went to Barnard. It changed my life.
Me too. It was amazing. That's so
It's amazing, right? It was like being a throw. We never tell years, but
okay.
I'm telling you, when I went there, it was like being thrown in cold water, you know.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. In the middle of New York City, it wasn't what it is now. You know, we were living all over the place. I was living in a rooming house, and in the room next door to me was a hooker. And my mother kept saying, are you sure this is student housing? I said, oh, yeah, it is. We had great adventures.
Oh, I love that you went to Barnard. I feel like you meet, and when you meet Barnard women, they're always interesting. It's just amazing.
It's a great place.
Cool.
It's a special place. But Barnard is only one part. She's a very successful writer. She does all kinds of interesting things. She's had, like most human beings, a very complicated life. And she comes from a parent who was a wonderful writer and tragically died very young. But her new book is What Would Virginia Woolf Do? And it deals with aging, but a different kind of aging, because you point out, Nina, that you were just in your 40s when you started to get these symptoms, and you thought, what is going on?
That's right.
Right?
Yeah. When I was 46, I started not sleeping well suddenly. And I'd always been a great sleeper. And I was like, what is happening to me? And I did some research and realized I was at the beginning of perimenopause, that period kind of...
Between.
Yeah, that period between I described as kind of when you go from being relatively young to relatively old.
Right. And it's like sort of shocking because who needs it at that time?
And also because no one tells you about it. I mean, that was really the hard part for me. I had no idea all the things that were starting to happen to my body were coming. Most of my friends are older than I am, and because I had kids young, and so most of my friends are in their 50s. And I was just really surprised that no one had warned me about things like back fat and, you know.
Right, I mean, that you would suddenly start changing.
Yes.
And it's true. You can be the thinnest person in the whole world, but your body starts to change.
Yeah.
Gravity seems to disappear.
Yeah. With the decrease in estrogen, basically, there are a million. I mean, like, if you Google perimenopausal symptoms, there are 33 symptoms, and they're pretty much all linked to the decrease in estrogen.
So where did the book come from in the middle of all this? Because you were always doing a million things, writing and putting things together. And later I'm going to ask you about your mom, too, because you've been on many journeys with that.
Yeah, sure. Well, the book came about because basically I started having these perimenopausal symptoms and wanted to talk about it with my girlfriends. And I created a Facebook group, a secret Facebook group called What Would Virginia Woolf Do? The name is...
Interesting to pick Virginia Woolf because she did away with herself.
I know. The name is a dark joke. It's really just... Basically, I started this group for me and my friends, who were mostly a bunch of kind of funny, literary-minded
feminists.
Right,
and you had been a literary agent.
I had been a literary agent. A lot of my friends are writers. And the joke is Virginia Woolf killed herself in her 50s. Maybe we should all just kill ourselves, which we still think is really funny, but it's sometimes hard to explain. So I started a Facebook group, and the Facebook group kind of grew and grew and started to take up more of my time. I was working on another book, a more literary memoir about my mother, and I had gotten a master's degree in something called narrative medicine. So at the time, I was doing some narrative medicine consulting.
And that's, I never heard of that till I read about you.
Yeah, it's a really interesting.
What is it?
People describe it in different ways. It's a program at Columbia. The way I describe it is it's the study of... the study of our experience, how we tell our stories in the context of death and dying. It's really
and
a
you
program.
You lived through that with your mother.
And I lived through that with my mother, exactly. My mom died when I was 19 of breast cancer that she kept a secret for
Amazing.
Many years. And it's really why I went to the program. I was writing a memoir about her and really wanting to understand more of her experience of why she kept her illness a secret and her experience of dying. And it led me to do some work. I worked at a hospital in Brooklyn called Maimonides, where I worked with, you know, in palliative care
right.
and with residents. And
always on this search. Did you ever, and I was trying to remember, find out why your mother decided to keep it a secret?
I think, you know, I'll never know for sure. I think it was a combination of... I think one part of her was probably trying to protect me, but honestly, I think more she was, it was kind of selfish. I mean, I think she was really didn't want to deal with other people's grief around what she was dealing with.
And she didn't want people to look at her.
She didn't want people to look at her
as a sick. You know, Nora Ephron chose that.
Yeah,
too.
I know. I was surprised when Nora Ephron
we
did
were
that.
All, I can't even tell you.
Yeah.
The 2 weeks before she died, we were all in the theater together. And as always, she had secret stashes of candy in her bag and was handing it out to everyone, looking terrific.
Wow.
And no one knew.
Yeah.
Not even her kids.
No, it was crazy. And it was the same thing with my mother. Yeah. It was 2 weeks before she died that her mother didn't even know. I mean, it was insane.
And so painful for you.
Yeah.
Because as a 19-year-old, you sort of even feel guilty. Like, what happened here?
It was horrible. And I was living abroad for the 9 months before she died. So, yeah, it's a huge sense of regret that I wasn't there with her. And I had so many questions. And, yeah, I wish she had handled it differently.
You know, we all do what we have to do at the moment. Nina Loris Collins, and I'm sure she knew that she had produced a strong child and that you would ultimately get through. And she left behind a really interesting trail and a legacy. You were brought up in a biracial family.
Yeah.
Were you, like the new royal bride, proud of your heritage as a kid, or was it complicated?
It wasn't. The racial stuff was never complicated for me, and I often wonder why. I mean, my mother was black, my father was white. My mother was a writer and a playwright and a filmmaker.
Yeah, really gifted.
Really gifted. Her work wasn't really known so much when she was alive, but it is now, thank God. She was very talented.
Because of you.
Because of me. And her work talks about race a lot, but when I was growing up, it just race was not an issue in our childhood. I have very few memories, a couple memories, you know, of being called an Oreo on the school bus, but I really never felt like
there was much
prejudice or isolation. No, and I've honestly always liked being half black and half white. I feel,
unique.
Yeah, and like a lot of people, I always feel slightly other, and I feel comfortable with it. Like I would never, usually if I have to choose one, I would probably identify more with being black because my mother was black and she raised us. But I really just kind of feel both, and that's fun.
Which is great. And yeah. Then you found books and things that your mother had done.
Yeah.
Which you couldn't deal with for what, I think you said, 10 years.
Yeah, more than that, probably. So obviously, growing up, I knew she was an artist, and I knew she made a film called Losing Ground. She made one called The Cruise Brothers when I was 10 in 1980, 10, 11, and then Losing Ground in 1982. But neither film was ever released. But I, of course, knew of them and loved them and was interested in her work. And then she died. And then for about, I guess, almost 20 years, all of her work just kind of lived in a trunk that I kind of carried around and never really read. And then I started going through it and reading her stories and her plays, and I ended up having her films released, and I sold a collection of short stories called Whatever Happened to Interracial Love, and they've all done really well.
To great
it's been
acclaim.
Amazing. Yeah, it's really to great acclaim. It's been an amazing thing. When the film was released, it was included in a film festival at Lincoln Center, and I thought, oh, great, like now the film will be available,
right,
and a few people will see it, and that'll be the end of it. But then it got incredible reviews, and the New Yorker called her a genius. That was like a really huge moment for me.
And her daughter, who had the courage and the heart to pull all this together.
It's been really, it's been, like the Virginia Woolf stuff, I have to say, it's all been very surprising and organic.
And had life of its own.
That's right.
Well, and that's like, what would Virginia Woolf do? It's girlfriends talking to each other about every single thing, which we do.
Are you in the group, by any chance?
No.
Oh, you should join the group.
I'm a bad belonger.
Oh, that's okay. So back to that story. So I started this group, and at the time I was doing this narrative medicine stuff, but then the group kind of started to take over my life. It became very demanding. The group now has 19,000 women. So it's become
this extraordinary,
very busy, interesting place where women are super candid and connect. And so basically I wrote the book because after about a year of doing the group, we only had around 1,200 women at the time, but it was taking up so much of my time, I thought I need to do something to justify spending all my time on Facebook, because it wasn't a commercial venture. It was just a labor of love. And so then I wrote a book proposal and sold it, and that's how the book came about.
Which, and the book deals with everything, whether it's what you're going to wear, to sex, to your kids, to your health, mm-hmm. to everything, to your work life. And it's funny, sad, real, and it talks about the things that we talk about to our close friends, as only women can do. Men can't do that.
Yeah.
They'll talk about hockey.
Right, exactly.
You know, or baseball.
Or politics. Yeah, no, I mean, basically the way I wrote the book is I looked at what the women in the group talk about, and I kind of broke it down into the major subjects, which you just covered. And then I kind of wrote my own take. I mean, the book is really my story, and then as you've read it, and then so fashion, beauty, kids, depression. And then I kind of branch out into experts. I talk to experts. I talk to my friends. I quote some of the Wolfers, which is what the women in the group call themselves. So I kind of describe it as like a funny, sexy, sometimes sad look at aging, because that's what we're talking about in the group.
And to try to put aging in a light without shame, because
Absolutely.
We live in a society where, right, every day new stories about how to eliminate your lines, how to have new skin regime that will change you. Now, we all love that stuff, but it has to be with a sense of humor.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you've encapsulated it. I mean, for me, the whole project of the group and the book was to kind of say, there's nothing for us to be ashamed about, and we can, you know, let's, I mean, when I started the group, the idea for me was just to have a place to be kind of self-deprecating and funny about these issues that I was struggling with, because what else are you going to do but laugh about it and learn how to deal with it? And that's really what we do, you know.
Right, and you had other issues, having 4 kids very young.
Yeah.
Going through marriages that don't always work, but to be able to come out of them and say, it's okay.
Right, that's right.
You know, I'm on to the next, and I can deal.
Yeah, that's
instead
exactly.
Instead of hiding under the covers, which is the impulse.
Oh, you'd be a perfect wolfer. It's a shame you're not on Facebook. But yes,
I'm on
got
Facebook,
it.
But
okay.
We use it mostly for work, for our show.
But you've got the idea, exactly. And we've learned so much from each other. The women in the group are amazing, and you see all these stories of resilience and sadness and pain, and people are honest about the stuff that a lot of people don't want to talk about, and it's important.
The things that we do that we think we can keep under the covers,
that's right.
too.
That's right.
And yet, why not?
Why?
Right?
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly. It's that whole Brené Brown idea of vulnerability and the strength in being vulnerable.
And you've had a lot of adventures, too, which are fun to read about.
Thank you. Yes.
Going to Burning Man. You've got to read it, because you'll all get a big kick out of, you know, what Nina closing her eyes goes into. You know, whether it's, you know, a thing where they talk about group sex, but you're not sure whether it's really group sex. Or,
I didn't do actual group sex. There's a chapter in the book where I go to the orgy dome at Burning Man, but I went to the right, as they
explain
say.
Burning Man. Not everyone knows what Burning Man is.
So Burning Man is this huge festival gathering in the desert the week
every
before
year.
Labor Day every year in Nevada, and there's no money exchanged there. It's a giant gathering of people. There's this whole idea of leave no trace, and there's no exchange of money. So one of the things that's interesting about it is there's no commercialization. Like, you go there and you realize, oh my God, I'm in a place where there are no signs, there are no logos, right? It's just people in camps, and a lot of parties and a lot of dance music and a lot of art, huge art installations everywhere. And the fun part about it, for me, the most fun part is that you bike around in the desert, and so at night it's really beautiful. It's crazy dusty, and it's ultimately, I think, really kind of hedonistic, and I don't think I'll go again. I've been twice.
Well, that's enough. You did it.
Twice was enough. The guy I went with really loved it, and I was like, he wanted to go back every year, and I was like, I just don't see why. There are other things I'd rather do. But the second year there, we went to this orgy dome, which is this this
pot
tent
of Burning Man.
At Burning Man. But you can, I describe it in the book. Everyone should just read the book. But you can either go to the left or to the right. And if you go to the left, you're going to like the real orgy part. And right. if you go to the right, you're just having sex in public with other people.
Which just, is very brave.
Which is very brave. And it was a totally hilarious adventure and not something I ever thought I'd do.
And did you find it funny? Or
it was actually really fun and funny. And as I say in the book, it was really clean and everyone was really beautiful. And it was hilarious. I mean, the funny thing is at the time, like, I'm not a big one for secrets, as everyone who knows me knows. But at the time, we didn't tell the people we were with at Burning Man. We felt like I just didn't want everyone talking about it all week,
right,
and wanting to go with us. But then, like, 6 or 7 months later, when I found myself writing the book and I was writing the sex chapter, it was just too good a story
so
to not write.
To
I just had to write it.
And I love, because only women think like that, when you commented on how clean everything
yeah.
was. Because before thinking about the sex, are people going to watch? How are you going to walk naked in a group of strangers?
Right.
You're looking to see if it's clean.
Totally. We brought our own sheet.
I yeah. know. I thought that was really... I mean, there are so many moments of truth in what would Virginia Woolf do. So whether you're starting menopause, whether you're in menopause, whether you're past it, it's really about aging, the joys, the sorrows, and getting through life. It's not easy, but it's okay.
Yeah.
Give yourself a sense of humor and a lot of strength. Come to grips with, even in your case, your mother, mm-hmm. who did the best she could do. You know, when you think about your mom dying in her 40s, she didn't have time to be discovered.
Yeah.
You know, it just didn't fit into that limited framework.
Yeah.
So
no, I know. It's
part of your destiny.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Nina. All the best to you.
Thank you so much.
What would Virginia Woolf do? And other questions I ask myself as I attempt to age without apology. Available in all the bookstores, online, and everywhere else. I'm Joan Hamburg for WABC.